about to enter the Double Dragon Podcast with Shane Greenwood, owner of Double Dragon Gym in the Sutherland Shire, Trent Lawrence, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, and active pro Muay Thai fighter, Hugh O'Donnell. Are you ready? Fight!
Fight! Okay, welcome back to End of the Double Dragon Podcast, episode 67. It's your boy, Shane Greenwood, here at Double Dragon Gym. And with me right now, I have Trenton Lawrence.
Hello.
And Hugh O'Donnell.
Hey.
How are we all today?
I have a cold.
Yeah, sounds like
I'm a pitcher of health.
That's it. Nice. All right, so this is our podcast. We've got a lot more breakdowns. We've got our WTF section, what the fight section. We've got a breakdown section. We also have a like, little bit of like a fitness tip and kind of coaching corner section at the end there. So just remember, if you ever, we kind of go off like, you know, asking people questions, and also just when we're teaching classes, because remember, we're all coaches as well that do this podcast, that like, you know, a lot of students ask us questions and we just do it here. But also if you ever have questions, just send them in. From there, like, you know, it doesn't matter what the question is either. From there, you can ask, like, why is Hugh so handsome?
Like, who keeps asking that question? I can't figure it out.
I don't know. It's like, you know, let's get this like, initials, H-O. It's like, well, how to tie your jiu-jitsu belt properly.
Jeez.
Try to do that on a podcast.
I'm going to have to post something.
We got the blog.
Oh, yeah.
Step-by-step guide.
That's it. So you always ask the question. So, like, let's just go into, the WTF section. What the fight said, like, a bit of news that's happened over in the combat world in this coming, the past week. So, just a little bit of happy news from there. So, former UFC, former UFC competitor, grappling stalwart Mackenzie Dern, giving birth to a baby girl just recently named Moa from there. Made a bit of news, even though he didn't know about it.
Yeah, I mean, like,
it's like, I don't keep up with this shit. But like,
it kind of explains her absence from the general
and
news.
And it'd be interesting as well, like, you know, if she ever comes back to fight also. Mm. Okay, because like, you know, especially with like, you know, new families and things like that, like, and trying to train, and when you're the mother yourself and then trying to train, it seems like it's just a little bit hard to organize. Not impossible, but
Michelle Waterson does it. She can manage it.
Yeah,
I respect the fuck out of anyone who does that. Yeah. I like literally physically can't fathom what goes into having a baby and then getting back to a professional sports competition.
And like, as we know in the past from there, like, you know, Ms. Kenzie Dunn's had a lot of like weight problems as well.
Mm.
And like, you get the same thing when you like, you know, when you got a baby as well. So like, just going from my wife experiences from there, it's like, especially if you're breastfeeding from that one, you know, you think about all the training you put in, then you got to put like the food back in, and but also like you basically got this little leech upon you as well.
Is that how you view your children as parasites?
Oh, that's nicely putting it. but they literally are sucking energy from you from there. So like, if she does go back into training from that one, it's like, it'd be very interesting how she goes about it. And if she comes back, because like, actually, she was pretty good. Mm. She was like, she was adapting an MMA game not too bad with a grappling game as well. But like, yeah, congratulations, Mackenzie Dern. All right, so going from there now, I guess it's a bit of happy-ish news now as well. Like, you know, we had Zab Judah fought on the weekend. He's 41 years old, and like, you know, this guy's a legend in boxing as well. Like, he recently had a fight against another American called Cletus Seldon. It was stopped in the fourth round. Cletus won, like, you know, Zab Judah was just getting a battering from there. And then he was taken to hospital after, like, you know, suffering a suspected brain bleed.
Yeah, really sad.
It's like kind of those sobering moments, like in combat sports, like, you know, like he's, like, you know, he's had a long career, Zab Judah, 41. But like, you know, this still happens to young fellas as well.
Yeah.
From that one. You know, and we talked about it before, like with the headgear stuff, you know, basically head blows and that. Like, yeah, you get them in fights. Sometimes, like, in fights, like, some fights just go way too long. Some fighters are, like, too tough for their own good.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, and that's when, like, things like, you know, proper officials and also, like, you know, corners that actually care about their fighters should, like, you know, see this stuff happen. But it's also gym culture as well. Like, you know, boxing does have a very hard sparring gym culture.
Yeah.
But like, good news is like, you know, Zab Judah's left hospital and like outcomes looks very positive from there. So like, yeah, so good to see that he's like, yeah, it turns around. Hopefully, no one licensed him from then out.
I mean, like, I really, hopefully, it's like he doesn't even want to compete. Like, you'd really hope that that would be kind of just like a, you know, it's done.
Yeah.
But yeah, like on top of that, if he does want to compete, I would be really sad to see. And, but I guess there are still places even within the US that don't have athletic commissions that like licensing is not as tricky a thing. But
old, like Idaho, Oklahoma, bare knuckle boxing.
Yeah,
it's at.
I would really hate to see him be given a license at this point.
Oh yeah.
But there was a little bit of chatter, like, and as I followed this story from people talking about him dropping into gyms to spar and just like kind of bringing like a hype team with him, but. Sort of like people were saying that, like, you know, he'd drop into gyms and spar with guys that, like, really think he shouldn't even be sparring with and kind of getting pieced up.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like if you people.
Like Khabib?
They were touched up Khabib. And people were kind of saying that, like, you know, if from within his camp it was looking like, you know, it had the makings of a pretty sad fight.
Yeah.
And ultimately it did.
Yeah. It's
whether or not that's
it's
true.
Like a. It's one of those ones, lots of motivation. I think he said in the past, he goes, yeah, one more title run. But, like, really, like, I watched this fight. Like, I have a set look of it. And, like, first round looked okay. And then it just kind of went downhill from there.
Yeah.
Like, it's like he just couldn't get anything going. And then, like, you know, Cletus was using a lot of body work. And then he just started when the body work took the toll, take the gas out of the legs of Zab from there. He just started going up top and just clubbing him.
Yeah,
it's absolutely common. But like Zab, like, yeah, tough. But you know, that's not really a competent in my books. Like being tough, that guy's really tough.
Yeah,
and it's like it's usually most of the time he gets hammered a lot.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's a backhanded compliment.
Not something that you really want. It's kind of like essential to be an elite level fighter is toughness, but it can't be your defining factor.
Yeah. It's the same as telling someone in jiu-jitsu, hey, you're really strong. Well, fuck you.
But you got a hell of a chin, man.
And I was just going, well, it's like, you're really weak. Enjoy. All right. So going up from that, so just recently, which we'll do in our breakdown section next, but like, you know, Henry Cejudo from there now is flyweight king, bantamweight king. If flyweight's still around, that is, from there.
And, at present, flyweight king.
Yeah, and also a former, like, you know, gold medalist in the Olympics. Like, I don't know, would he be, like, one of the best combat sports athletes ever?
Don't think that's a case for it.
He's definitely in the talks.
Yeah.
And that one's like, you know, there's not many that can accomplish that and, like, you know, do that. I can't, was there any other, like, gold medal champions that's also been a UFC champion?
No.
I believe, like, Henry's the first.
Yeah, because, like, was it? Was Cormier, like, was he a silver?
I'm not sure.
Maybe, I don't think Cormier medaled.
No?
Yeah.
Maybe Rousey, I think of Dan Henderson.
Rousey was a silver, wasn't he? Or gold?
Oh, in
judo?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I think Rousey was, medaled in judo.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I think Henry's the first gold medalist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quite an accomplishment.
Yeah.
Like, I did a little research on this as well, like, you know, on Henry Cejudo's background from there. So he never wrestled on the collegiate level because, like, from high school, he was actually drafted into the U.S. Olympic team straight away. In his first Olympics, he medaled. And then when he had a second go to Olympics, so if you know, the Olympics just roll around every 4 years, he didn't even make the team on the second go. Which is kind of says a bit, like, if you look at the early careers, Henry Cejudo, like, you know, even before UFC, a lot of weight trouble. Like, ballooning up with his hard weight cuts and that. And, like, you can see, like, you know, when he came to this fight, he was fucking jacked.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and before, like, he's looked, like, kind of soft. Like, you wouldn't even tell, you go, like, he's a mad wrestler. You go, you know.
Yeah, but it's like Henry's having weight issues that people close to him were directly attributing to just sheer lack of discipline. Like, you know, it's not like he was really punishing himself to make an unmakeable weight class. Like, he was just struggling to not eat.
I think it's one of those ones when, like, you can tell, like, you know, doesn't wrestle at a collegiate level and, like, you know, just goes, wins his first gold medal in the first Olympics, he's probably, like, one of those really talented dudes that goes, yep, I'm going to coast through this.
Yeah.
But now it seems like he's turned it around a fair bit because, like, you know, see him, he's like, you see the Instagram stories of the strength and conditioning guys working with him just doing it, like, you know, it's just insane.
Yeah.
But also, like, he said, he goes, I've always worked hard, but, like, it's, even to this, I get to the point of being burnt out and, just overdoing it.
Yeah.
And then now, like, basically, you know, he goes, I've reduced my volume and just put it, like, in different places and that. And, like, you know, Sam, like, you look great. And
yeah.
As we were talking the fight before, it didn't look too bad in the fight either. Right. Cool. So, like, yeah, so that just covers our short segment on the WTF with the fight from there. And then we'll catch you next for the breakdown section.
This is the Enter the Double Dragon podcast.
Okay, and welcome back to our breakdown and preview section here. So we talked a bit of the UFC 238 last week from there. How did we get on our picks, actually? I'm thinking about, like,
I picked.
Mine were all wrong, actually, but I didn't really, like, 100% seriously. I was just joking when I picked Jessica.
that's his asterisk next to his pick there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. Really, that fight went more or less exactly how
I picked Henry, I think. Yeah, I did.
Yeah, you picked Henry.
Yeah. But I did pick Cerrone. I picked Cowboy. But, I think Cowboy was losing that fight up until the unfortunate stoppage.
Yeah. So let's just get into it then. So, we'll just go, main fight. Like, you know, just quickly on some of the fights. Like, I didn't get to see them all, but I heard a lot of them were really good fights. Like, Zhao Yan versus Angel Lee was pretty good. Zhao Yan won that one. Kevin Kata versus Ricardo Lamas absolutely sparked Ricardo Lamas and supposedly fractured his jaw in three places. Oof. As well.
Yeah.
Alexa Grasso won against Carolina Kovalevich.
Yeah,
from there. And, like, I heard it was, like, a pretty good performance because, like, she's been pretty lackluster in these last couple of fights, but, like, it seemed like her boxing game came back again. Mm. Aljamain Sterling versus Pedro Munhoz. Aljamain Sterling won, and Aljamain Sterling really cements himself as the top contender.
100%, yeah.
From that one. And also probably, like, a viable king for the cringe crown. If you saw his post-fight interview.
Yeah, that was bad, yeah.
That was bad.
Tatiana Suarez won against Nina Askos. Tatiana Suarez also puts herself as the top contender in the strawweight division. Pretty sure. And, like, she's a fucking monster. Like, you know, like, her versus Andrade is like, it's like the Hulk and the Thing versing each other. They're just, like, so strong in the weight class.
Yeah.
And that'll be a pretty interesting fight. So, Blagoev, Ivanov, and Tai Tuivasa versus each other. And Ivanov won in, like, a shit fight.
Jiggle fight.
Yeah, just a heavyweight shit show. It's actually very disappointing seeing Tai Tuivasa just keep losing. He's got a lot of talent. So, hopefully he turns it around. Peter Yan versus Jimmy Rivera. Peter Yan won that one. I heard that was a pretty good fight as well. So let's go into the three main fights to talk about here. So we had Tony El Kikui Ferguson versus Donald Cowboy Cerrone from here. Interesting ending to this one, but how was it looking coming up into, like, up until the second round then?
First round, slow start. I think you guys predicted that, actually. I think you predicted him, Tony, with a slow start.
Tony's, like, notoriously, like, one of the slowest starters ever.
They're actually both reasonably slow starters. Cowboy can start hard, but he can also get run over. Like, he can kind of get caught sleeping early. But I actually thought probably, like, Cowboy actually had a reason, probably, like, a more effective first round than he was giving credit for. Like, he was landing, like, body kicks over Tony's right arm quite well. And he was, like, catching Tony. Like, Tony was doing a lot of, like, we talked about last week, we said, like, Tony will try to discourage you by just doing, like, bizarre for the sake of bizarre footwork, like, that you can't really get a read on. So Tony would, like, without threatening attack or anything, just spin around. You'd find him, like, Cowboy was reasonably content to kind of, like, run over the top of him and kind of get, like, sort of be, like, seated on Tony's back for seconds at a time, just, like, close distances. He does things like that. And he gave Tony some uncomfortable spots. Like, when he would just kind of fire down the middle and get a roll on with his feet, he landed well on Tony because Tony does, like, what we did discuss last week, he likes to take really wide, broad steps out with his chin right up in the air and he'll back up in a straight line because he really likes that kind of, like, step back, and then wide swing laterally. So, like, Cowboy would fire down the middle and start to land well.
Lining him up in that first round.
Yeah. But it did kind of feel like Cowboy was lining things up and not achieving them in a lot of way, because as the second round progressed, Tony started to kind of just get a roll on and then kind of just work off of that footing a little bit. And what I saw for the most part, especially, like, in the striking exchanges at the start of the second round, I thought Cowboy was really settled on firing down the center line and Tony was just adding a little bit of awkwardness to his angles, and just he was coming around to the outside like he'd put a hook over the top of Cowboy's right hand, or he'd come with sort of a right cross over the top of the jab. And he started to sting Cowboy, because Cowboy does have that very much like upright style of punching, like that upright and long, and sort of just like Tony just kind of sweeping to the outside with round shots over the, he could just come over the top of center line attacks. Tony also was just like ripping in a like a reasonable like rear side push kick, and sort of starting to slow. I think, I guess, like the tactic against Cowboy tends to be to go through his body and kind of slow him. And you would see Cowboy made uncomfortable from those rear leg push kicks, because he was putting everything behind him, like the zero set up on them, just firing down the middle. But they were landing and kind of,
well, I guess like Serrani's not so much about any kind of lateral movement,
yeah,
and things like that. It's like just straight up, like, you know, either going forward or maybe just waiting for intercepting knees for people to come forward as well.
It was a good strategy. It worked well for him in the second round. He kept them in the distance. So Serrani couldn't, he couldn't box him. He couldn't use his hands the way he wanted to in the second.
Yeah, it's like very much like, I found like sort of an unsettle and then like just unsettle and then strike something hard. It's like started to really kind of bust up Cowboy's face and just keeping him like, Cowboy would throw and then Tony would, yeah, come over the top and then just like have Cowboy kind of sit up to try to counter back, and then that's when he'd catch him as he would sort of up his posture a little bit, I suppose.
So if we saw in the second round, they're like, so like Cowboy was getting paced up pretty high.
Yeah, and towards the end of that second round.
And then like at the end, like there was like, you know, the buzzer or the bell went off, and then there's a bit of a late shot.
Yeah.
So this is like, you know, this is like the controversy that's kind of going on at the moment from there. So in the end, the fight got stopped in the rest break from there, because basically, well, like, you know, Tony landed a late shot. It was on the nose from there, and then Cowboy went to his corner. His nose was probably already busted up.
Yeah.
Blows his nose, inflates his eyeball.
Which we have seen before.
Yeah. It's like, it's a thing that happens from there, like, you know, if you break your nose from that one, and then you blow your nose, like, you actually blow, like, a pocket of air into that sinus cavity, and it could go into your eye, and basically, it inflated his eye straight up, and it just shut it closed.
Yeah.
That.
It was really disgusting when he tried to shove his fingers in it to sort of open it up and squeeze it. Yeah,
that was a gangster.
I was like, that was disgusting. But kind of cool as well.
It was pretty interesting though, because like, it's not like a ringside physician was willing to take an end swell to that. Like, they just looked at it and said no, which is pretty fair.
But when is that shot?
Yeah. It was weird though. Like, what I found odd about kind of the controversy around it is when they, so they called to have a look at the video replay, and if you look at the video replay, that means the fight's over. You can't make a call that is going to sway whether or not the fight continues based on video replay. You can only look at it to kind of split hairs once the fight's already been called. Mm-hmm. And he was looking like, if the punch landed on the nose, the late punch, all good. Tony wins by injury. But if it landed on the eye, it would have been considered to contribute to the injury, and thus the fight would maybe be a no contest.
Okay.
But I don't understand, because like the question was, did the punch shut his eye? The punch was found to land on his nose, but it was blowing his, it was the broken nose that closed the eye. Like, it's a kind of like a sort of runoff effect of getting hit on the nose.
But so, also, I know some people will disagree. I listened to Heavy Hands today and they didn't think anything of it being a late punch. But to me, I could have filed a tax return in the time that punch landed after the bell.
There's definitely a full beat after. It wasn't like he was... Like, I guess the problem is, it's not even just time. It's like whether or not the shot was in motion, which I don't believe it was.
No. Nah.
It was just like... But also, like...
Serrani's hands were down.
Serrani had registered the bell enough to just completely self-defending. Yeah. But also, was it Mowgli Arthur?
Yeah.
Was not close enough to these two. No. Like, as a referee, and I know it's very easy to criticise referees, but when you hear that 10-second clapper, you get really close.
Yeah.
Because as soon as that buzzer sounds, and like people do say, somewhat stupidly, but like you can understand that they say, you know, like the buzzer doesn't end around, the referee ends around. Mm. So like basically people's defence, and I haven't really heard this in defence of this fight, I just hear this sometimes, is to say if the ref's not physically present to signal the end of the round, and fighters can't be blamed. Could have disagreed, but people do say that. But he, like, whether or not that's your take on it, he was too far away. Like, he should have been there. Because, like, referee has to be close enough so that when the buzzer sounds, you actually physically separate the two fighters and put yourself as a barrier in between them.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think, like, it was... Yeah, I think, like, it was a little bit odd that they was given, like, sort of no respect to the idea that punch had... I mean, like, do I think that had, like, a... Do I think like the like Cowboys eye would have been different without that punch landing? Probably not. I think the damage was probably done before the punch. But it's weird that you just do nothing when there was a blatant punch after the bell and the fight is going to end due to injuries. Like, I think you have to give... There has to be, like, a benefit of the doubt kind of system there. Mm-hmm. Like, it's weird that there was absolutely zero repercussions of a pretty blatant foul. Mm. But that tends to be the go in MMA.
Yeah. I think it's strange. I mean, if he's, you know, whether it's deliberate or accident, if you did a high tackle in AFL or spear tackled someone in rugby or something... That's it. You're benched. You're out.
Yeah.
But if you make an error like a super, in my opinion, a really late punch.
That's pretty late. Yeah.
There's nothing.
But that's just the weird thing in MMA. Like, if you kick someone in the nuts and they have to separate for injury time for 5 minutes, and then you'll get a warning if you do it once, even if you drop them with the ball kick. So it's like, get back to it. Don't do it again. And it's like, okay, that guy's gonna be visibly affected. So it's like, why not cheat?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. What's
that's in your direct interest?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's it. Go for the nut shots.
I just think in MMA, like, I guess it's getting to a little bit of a tangent, but I do think they need more automatic point deductions.
Mm.
Because like, if you foul, like, you don't need, if like you're holding your fingers out and it looks like you could eye poke someone, get a warning. But if you shove your finger in someone's eye, you don't need a warning after you've done the foul. Mm. You can take a point straight away.
Yeah. Well, it's like, it's meant to be like that with your fingers down. Like, you know, under the new rules for there, but like, I've never seen anyone like basically pull the trigger on that point or that automatic point deduction.
Like, really, you got to poke someone in the eye twice to get a point deduction.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's comes back to this as well. Like, Tony lands that shot, and it, you had the fight continued, especially no one was going to take a point or anything.
No.
It was just like, hey.
Yeah. Hey, guy.
So you can warn him, but like I said, it's not like he can really do it again. Like, we'll come into the third round. So what's the point of a warning?
Yeah.
Like, he can strike late again, I guess, but. It would be at the end of the fight. It wouldn't have an effect on the rest of the fight.
Yeah, who cares?
Oh, well, in the end, Tony Ferguson was awarded the win from there. But, like, yeah, just can't keep his name out, like, you know, out of the controversy. You know?
Yeah. Well, it's also his second win by injury stoppage in between rounds.
Mm.
He beat Pettis.
I didn't like the booing. There was heaps of booing from at the end of it. I didn't warrant that. I don't think it did.
I think they were booing the foul, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
And I guess when you're there as well and, like, you know, when you don't kind of know what the intricacies are going on, you just go, I saw a late punch and it stopped now. This is bullshit. Like, that's what you register.
Yeah.
Do you think they'll rematch it?
I think they should. But like, you know, like they call, like, you know, it's like how many times are we gonna try and make this fight? Like, you know, Khabib versus that. But it's obviously Khabib's gonna fight
for the first.
That's exactly how it should go.
It's probably time.
Yeah. And like Tony's really just going, like, you know, probably just going, I can wait.
But I guess it's like how much time would it take? Because if we've got to, like, Cowboys not going to be ready like as quickly as he'd like to be.
Nah.
Like with medical suspension. So it's like, if we have to wait 6 months to do that fight, probably don't do it.
Yeah.
I'd like to see Ferguson fight Gates. Yeah, I think that's like a ridiculous fight.
That is a pretty
good fight. No, I want Khabib. I want to see him on Khabib. But it was like Ferguson's weird unorthodox fighting style. It just seems to be his strategy now.
He's such a bizarre guy. Yeah. It's also like his methods are so odd. Like, he was explaining at the press conference that he has a ring in his, like, he has his own gym, I believe, like his own kind of facility. He has a ring with no ropes on it, which I assume means like kind of like an elevated canvas platform because it has no ropes.
Like, can't blood, be like blood sport.
Oh, cool.
Because his logic is that, because he was explaining, like, someone asked him, one of the reporters asked, how do you think Poirier versus Khabib goes? And he said, you know, Poirier's good, but like a lot of his style is that, you know, hillbilly shoulder roll, which involves putting his back on the fence. And he thinks having a style that deliberately puts your back against the fence is just not conducive to beating Khabib, just plays into his hand too much.
Pretty much.
Which I can understand. So he says, like, purely, like, because of Khabib being at the top of the division, he has a ring with no ropes on it, so he can't put his back against the ropes. Like, he has to. And you can see that in his style a little bit. Like, it's that massive wide circles out, because if he backs up too much, he falls out, falls off the ring.
Not a bad strategy, though.
Yeah. Also, a strategy that's like, this is why you get injured so much.
When you're sparring,
you can literally fall out of the ring.
You need the Japanese style, like, it's just a bunch of guys on the outside.
Push your back.
All right, let's move on from that fight. So, also, we had Valentina Shevchenko, The Bullet, versus Jessica Evil Eye. I don't know. What can you say about this fight?
Oh, really? Man. They needed a body bag in the octagon for a while there. she was out for like 2 minutes.
But this fight to me, it sounds like something I probably talked about before, is like kind of one of the scariest things about MMA is the massive gaps you can see in certain areas between two people who are elite. Like when you watch two elite level boxers fight, like really elite, elite, like to the point where they're fighting for what is, like here, with this is an undisputed world title. So if two boxers are fighting for undisputed world champion status, you generally don't see things as dramatic as this. But there's something like kind of terrifying about MMA. You can get two people at the elite level that, like, this was an amateur fighting a professional as far as stand-up fighting is concerned.
Yeah.
Like, that was a really kind of scary KO. Even to the point where, like, I saw little clips of, like, when they bring the camera to the back of Jessica eyeshadow boxing. And I was like, no. Like, it's janky and it's awkward and, like, super rhythmic, just circling the same way over and over again. And this was just like really nuts and bolts stuff. Like Valentina threw the body kick and just saw that she was just not even really effectively dealing with it, but dropping both arms to just kind of shield that, and then just fires it straight up to the head, knowing the hands will come down, and then just...
You could hear the impact on the audio.
Yeah, it was loud.
It was loud.
The knockout was ugly, like she was jerking her legs and stuff, like just really... And almost one of those ones where it's like, kind of like sad to watch almost. Like, not just the knockout, like, and like, especially in MMA when they're wearing little gloves, like, dramatic knockouts obviously always still happen, even at the top level. But just to watch, like, the difference in movement between the two of them was, like, kind of terrifying. Like, because if you took, like, that fight and that skill discrepancy and made it, like, just a stand-up fight, like, people wouldn't want to sanction it.
Yeah.
You'd be like, no way.
And it wasn't just because, like, you know, oh, it was a woman getting knocked out or anything. It was scary in the sense that she just didn't wake up for ages. And people were just milling around going, oh, shit, what's going on?
I think they purposely kept the camera off her, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. They took the camera off for quite a while.
But, like, as in, like, just watching Valentina, like, she's there, like, just following her around. It's like, she goes, yep, and then just like, oh, shit.
I'm not going to be the first.
Yeah, you could really see that coming from a mile away as well. That high kick of just, like... I didn't really listen to this with commentary. I imagine the commentators mentioned it too. Like, it was just so glaring that you go, like, you'd almost look at that and go, she's baiting the head kick.
Yeah.
Like, she wants it to come. She's got a counter plan. But, like,
you got something for you? You going to pull your head back?
And I think it was also, like, it was sort of just, like, a combination of skill discrepancy and lack of confidence. Like, she was not... you try not to read into these kinds of things too much. But it is, like, a viable analytical thing is just... confidence in approach. Like the way she was circling was just like she was trying to come up with an idea. Like there was no, like she probably had a plan and I cannot imagine she was following it. It was just like a real kind of, her reactions were quite slow, really jerky, nervously tense, and then just that's where you see the ugliest knockouts is when someone's just moving with tension.
It's one of those divisions now, like the women's like flyweight from there. It's like, because like Jessica, I had 3 wins coming into this. And, like, you know, I go, man, like, you know, she was the legitimate contender. It's like there's so far a gap between Valentina and that. Like, basically, flyweight is men's light heavyweight. And Valentina is fucking John Jones. There's no one. There's absolutely no one that can, like, that can probably dethrone her any time.
I bet there's no one that can dance like her either.
I don't know.
That's a sweet dance.
Jeez, she fucking kills it.
But she just has ridiculous credentials as well. Like, if you've got, like, a lot of the time, I think... in women's MMA in particular, it's like a lot of the fighters, they don't have the types of combative backgrounds that male MMA fighters have, is that they come from arts, like maybe they were recreationally training jiu-jitsu and got quite good at it and then, you know, got into the other arts. So like, I'd like to have a go at MMA. Whereas like, you've got someone like Valentina, like she won the IFMA World Games in Muay Thai eight consecutive years, I'm pretty sure. Like she beat Valentina.
Joanna.
3 times. Like, that's a lot of full contact combat experience. Like, that not a lot of other women, especially in the emptier women's divisions, can match.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's like experience adds up. Adds up to that composure as well. And just getting, you know, just positioning in ring craft.
Yeah.
Wins fights.
Who are they going to feed to her next?
Probably that Caitlin Coote again. Yeah, she was on the undercard. But like, yeah. People that you never heard of.
Yeah.
It's
pretty much.
But like, they do make a lot of empty divisions and then get really bad at building them.
Yeah. You know, and again, they should just have a champ versus champ fight again. Fight a man in Nunes again. Like, you know, like second fight, like I didn't really think Amanda Nunes really pulled that win convincingly out.
Yeah, I could give it. I probably gave that fight to Valentina. I like it. Yeah.
Nunes will just try and walk straight through Valentina's leg kicks.
Can Nunes make 25?
Like, can we it would just be one of those ones that, like, yeah, she has to go back up.
Are we going to allow Amanda Nunes to take the... So that would tell you about the state of women's MMA, if Amanda Nunes gets 3 belts.
Yeah, that's about right. It's everything one dreamed and one delivered. All right, and let's go to the last fight here quickly. So we had Henry Cejudo, the king of cringe.
Yeah.
New nickname for him, as you should. He is cringy as fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like when he got on the microphone, he's like, I'm triple C, you know, champion, Olympic champion. It's like quadruple C. Cringe as fuck. Bantamweight champion, flyweight champion, Olympic champion.
I still don't know what the magician's hat and the snake and the bunny rabbit and all that stuff at the weigh-ins were about. I still can't figure out.
He must have been laughing his ass off when he came up with that. Like, yes, this is such a funny idea. Everyone's going to love it.
And it's funny, like, you know, like Dana White just going, what is going on? I don't understand.
Yeah, there were crickets. No one made a noise.
He just goes away as soon as Hank goes, oh, no.
But it's also like, when you're that small, don't dress up as a magician. Like, you look like a party dwarf. Like, we're trying to give legitimacy to the little man divisions.
Yeah.
And he looks like a hireable dwarf.
Yeah.
Like, it looked like Daniel White was going to pick him up and just throw him as far as he could into the crowd.
So, Henry Cejudo was versus Marlon Moraes from that one, man, and pulled out the win from there. So Henry Cejudo had to go through a little bit of adversity in the first round of this fight, didn't he?
Yeah. But I thought, like, Marlon said after this fight, you know, the game plan wasn't to kind of, like, that he blew his wad a bit, like, he used all his power in the first round, but also thought, like, he was landing well, but he was landing well with, like, a weird kind of shot selection, like, soccer kicking in the inside leg and stuff, and, like, he would have bash up shins the next day, like, he was kicking Henry in the knee, and it was just kind of like, you're really keeping him at the range that you like to fight at, and he was intercepting quite well, like, he fired up a couple of pretty good high kicks and had Henry guessing really well. But he just, like, go back to sort of, like, kind of tactically stupid shots. Like, really barrel all his energy into kicking the inside leg or kicking, like, poorly placed outside low kicks and stuff like that. Where it's like, just sit in sit back a little bit and just fire to do actual lasting fight-altering damage. Because, like, you can see, like, Henry got out of this fight, had to show some toughness, got out of that round, not slowed a whole lot. And that's, like, compounds on if you're burning more energy than you should. Just barreling up 100% into every shot. But you're not striking the body or you're not doing, like, big visible damage that's going to slow the slow your opponent in the next round. It's like, you're just setting yourself up for failure. Like, Henry can kind of, like, you know, adrenaline will take care of a lot of that. Like, he can wade through those just inside leg kicks on inside leg kicks and come back the next round. Like, I just thought...
He stuffed one of his legs, didn't he, during the first round?
Yeah.
He was pretty much limping on it. After that.
Oh, yeah, he did some damage for sure. But I think, like I said, like, adrenaline could kind of do the job in that. Because it wasn't like he was striking the leg, but he wasn't striking the leg on targets that are really going to slow someone down. Like, just kind of soccer kicking at full force on things.
Trying to pain you'll feel the next day.
You'll feel the next day, and also you can kind of walk through it. It's not like when you're doing low kick damage really well, like really hammering it at that RT bend, it will give up eventually. Like, you won't be able to hold your weight on the leg. None of the strikes getting done to the lower body by Marlon in this case, I don't think we're really slowing, fight-altering, big damaging shots. And that's probably, in my estimation, that would be a factor as to why Henry was able to come back so well. Because Marlon was throwing with so much power, but, like, not really demonstrating any shot selection. I think, like, I guess there was an element of, like, desperate maintenance of range. It's like he really wanted this fight at long distance, so he would just barrel in at kicks with 100%. And, like, having early success was probably Marlon's enemy here because he just goes, cool, this is working, and just reefing in with these kicks at 100%.
Because it turned around super fast really in the second. Yeah. I was like, I thought, oh, no, Henry's losing this fight. And then all of a sudden, oh, he's got him in a tie clinch. Oh, he's throwing knees up the middle. He's still doing it, you know. He didn't have an answer for it.
I think it's like really like Henry's clinch has really evolved ever since like that first DJ fight.
Yeah.
As well, like, you know, like he clinched, he was really good in the clinch, but not so much like in the striking kind of sense, like a lot more like, you know, wrestling, that's his background. But he seemed to add a lot more like, you know, actually like, you know, we'll clinch, but I'm going to find spots for my knees, elbows, and then like look for takedowns and trips off of that as well to kind of set things more up. So, yeah, and like, you know, It's like it seemed like a winning game plan, though.
Yeah, I think like when you look at that first fight with Mighty Mouse, it's like what Mighty Mouse kind of schooled Cejudo on was like the clinch, but not as just like a transitionary period between striking and getting a takedown. Like Mighty Mouse was happy to just sit his weight over Cejudo, hold him up at the upper body, and actually keep the fight standing in the clinch to deliver knees and those really kind of just like fundamental tie, like step, turn, load your knee, fire it up the midsection. Mm-hmm. And then after that fight, Cejudo invested in a Muay Thai coach, Kieran Fitzgibbons.
Yes.
Started to work with him after that fight. And I think that's where they started to kind of like use the clinch as like kind of like a bridging techniques between his wrestling and stand up, mm-hmm. which worked for him in this fight. But like, Marlon's clinch sucked, man.
Well, I guess like, I don't know, I've never really seen his clinch game.
No, I haven't seen heaps of it.
Because, like, you know, it's like his last couple of fights, he just knocked everyone out. Like, he's, like, we can tell now. He's an outside fighter.
Outside fighter, yeah.
And, like, you know, I think we talked about from there was, like, he uses his kick game and boxing, but if he just tries to use his boxing by itself, it's not that great either.
Yeah, he's more of a puncher than a boxer.
Mm.
And it seems like, because he even landed some good punches in, so this round, but generally singles. And it's kind of like, works on the basis that he's already doing damage with kicks. That's why, like, kind of is like, if you just try to, like, your plan A being just the types of punches he throws, they're pretty widely telegraphed. But once the hips start working into the kicks and he just gains that respect of, you know, which level the strike's coming at, then his punches start to work over the top.
Yeah.
But if you can kind of force that range where you have to engage him in actual boxing exchanges, doesn't have a heap to offer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a good fight. And, like, yeah. You know, it just shows, like, you know, Cejudo as well. It's just, like, teams like, one of those dudes as well, like, you know, when he was getting kicked in the outside range and, like, saying in the second round, like, in between the rounds, like, his corner just goes, look, we just got to go in.
Yeah.
You know, get the punches going and going in. And it's like, you know, some people, like, when they get battered, they go, like, be pretty hesitant to actually follow through the game plan. But he just goes, yep.
Yeah.
And he just did it.
Yeah, listen and adjust as well.
Mm. That's it. And that's what you want. And it should be very interesting to how he takes the rest of his career. Yeah. Also.
Do you want to see him go up to 45?
Not while Max Holloway's a champ, I don't
know. Yeah,
really.
I don't know. Yeah.
Like, if it was anyone else, like, you know, like, said, like, yeah, him versus Volkanovski, him versus, like, Jose Aldo and things like that, like, all these, like, I'm a match, I'm going, I'm cool with him.
Like, yeah, him, I like to see it.
Even, like, him and Ortega, mind that.
I've seen a bit of talk about that.
Yeah, that'd be a really good match. But, like, Holloway is just absolute nightmare matchup.
And that's, like, yeah. Really big size difference. Like Marlon was a fair bit bigger than Cejudo. And Max is a lot bigger than Marlon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, you know, like Shemmy Shield versus Horiguchi. Huge range. All right, so that concludes that section. We just talked the recaps on the UFC. Let's go into previews now. So this weekend, there's some really good stuff happening from one.
Good card.
Good card in general from there.
I only know the Muay Thai stuff, which tends to be the case, but it's a Muay Thai
man. Anyone know any part of the MMA stuff?
Angela Lee's fighting Michelle Nicolini.
Is that on the same card?
I'm not sure.
I don't think that's on this card.
Yeah, I don't think that's on this
card. Oh, that's coming up soon.
Sexy Armor comes back.
Yeah, I was surprised about that.
Yeah, like I can tell, like this is like a very heavy like kick Muay Thai.
It's
card.
A Muay Thai centric.
So like this weekend is it weekend or Friday actually?
I think it's Saturday.
Saturday. Okay, cool. Yeah. So we have one's legendary quest in China.
Are we gonna run out of names soon? I don't know.
No, I don't think so. There's heaps of epic works you can put together from there. One of the fights, so we'll go through the fights like as soon as it seems. So one of the fights from there, Roderick versus Liam Harrison.
Sweet fight.
Which you did a blog post about.
I did a lengthy breakdown on this one. Yeah. With GIFs.
So go check the blog post for that one. From that one, like read it out a little bit from there. But like that's a great match.
Yeah, great fight. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be like a real question of like, Roderick at that point where I think like he's sort of just now, like he's a former Channel 7 Stadium champion and a former WMC world champion. So well accomplished, but he's at that point where he's kind of like his last kind of stints in the major stadiums. He was kind of like coming up short against sort of the younger guys, but has fought like a laundry list of elite ties. So it's hard to see like his result. His form maybe wasn't the best, kind of concluding his stadium, but it's a really hard measuring stick when you're fighting elite ties in the stadiums. So it will be interesting to see how it goes against Harrison, who's obviously no slouch, like one of the top Westerners ever really, but I think it's going to be a matter of like it's pretty vastly different games. Like Harrison's going to be wanting to get that combination kind of volume work done, chop away at the legs on the oncoming Roderick, and Roderick's just going to be setting his feet. He'll just want to walk Harrison down, get him get him pedaling backwards, looking for that low kick, sit him up against the fence. He's got a big right hand, likes his low kicks himself. I think this one's going to be a real war.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so going up the card there, just closed it. Open it up again. All right, so just going up the card. Man, like, I'm looking for this card, and I'm like, there's only headshots of people, but see the shoulders, and like, there's some fucking monsters in here. Like, there's a, if you look on the app from there, like, just some of the MMA matches, like, there's a middleweight, this guy called Sharif Muhammad.
Holy crap.
Like, he's like, you just see just the top of his shoulders looks jacked, but once you go look at Sharif Muhammad, you go up, and there's this, like, Brazilian dude, middleweight as well, Gilberto Gaval.
Bloody hell.
He's like, got some traps.
Yeah.
Some people have been taking their vitamins.
Yeah.
Yeah. We knew you started free zone.
Yeah. That's it. Nice, China. I like it. Right, so, light heavyweight match from there. Super Series kickboxing. So, Anderson Silva, been around for a long time. Anderson Braddock Silva from Brazil.
The other Anderson Silva.
Yeah, not the spider from there. So, yeah. So, like, yeah, this is the one that, like, does all their glory kickboxing, or used to, versus Tariq.
Kabibes.
Yeah, from Morocco. From there. Never really ever seen Tariq.
I've seen Tariq, like, kind of like a Moroccan wild man. I think, like, could definitely be just kind of overwhelming for Anderson at this point. He's a little bit of a plotter. Mm-hmm. And, like, Tariq likes his striking combination. Very entertaining. But does get caught. Like, he gets tagged. He's not opposed to wearing one to give one, which does play into Anderson's hand a little bit, because where he's at in his career at this point, like, Anderson is still, like, a reasonably proficient kickboxer, but he's, like, you know, not the athlete he once was. No. I was never a super athletic heavyweight, really. But so, like, yeah, tends to fall off quick. So, like, his plodding nature could get him into trouble here, but, you know, only takes one with him still.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Like, you know, he's no stranger to fighting crazy Moroccans either.
No.
Doesn't mind, actually. He can find some holes to work through. So, from that one, and then we get into more of the fights that. That we know more about. Let's see. Like, you know, like, one of them is, like, you know, like, as we talked about before, like, you know, really high on Tyler Hardcastle. For me, interesting, in a kickboxing match.
I didn't really understand this, because I actually think, from what I've read about, like, I've seen Chen Zhang fight a fair bit, but I hadn't read a lot about him. Is that, like, I think a lot of his background is Muay Thai, so I don't, but he's been in, this is the second fight I've seen him in one. Mm-hmm. And his last fight was Panikos Youssef, who's also a Thai boxer, and that was kickboxing too. So, not really sure what the kickboxing ruling is. Interesting to see Tyler in a kickboxing fight. I'm not sure if he's fought kickboxing before. I've never been aware of him fight. Like, I don't think at a higher level. Maybe coming up, he fought a bit of kickboxing, but I've never been aware of him in a kickboxing match.
How do you reckon he'd go, like, in a kickboxing? So, like,
he does no bad stuff for it. Like, he's good in the clinch, but, like, he's a kicker, first and foremost. Like, wicked, fast left high kick. Left cross quite good. And can play a kick and counter cane very well against oncoming opponents, which works fine in kickboxing. Might have to get going a little bit with his hands more just for the kickboxing scoring conventions. But also, that tends to be the way it goes when you eliminate the clinch and elbows. You just have to be... you just have to have kind of combination punching more readily available, oftentimes. But, yeah...
It should be an interesting match. So another Muay Thai Super Series, another Muay Thai Super Series match in the bantamweight division from there. So we had a couple of the China boys, like, representing the home. So we had Hanzi Hao
coming back from his fight with Nomo Gayong Hadal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Versus Andrew Miller from Scotland, but I think via Thailand.
Yeah. Trains full time at FedEx.
Yeah. Cool. From that one. So yeah, should be an interesting match. How do you see that going down?
Yeah, it's a good match. Mm. You know, I haven't looked into that one extensively, but...
Hanzi's been pretty solid.
Hanzi's been pretty solid, but Miller's kind of just like something of like a perpetual underdog, you know, so, like, but he's tough as nails, and, like, he's had some real good success in one. Got good fast hands. Yeah, I have to say.
That's it. Mad Dog Fairtex, that's his...
Mad Dog Fairtex.
I like it. Let's see. More time record. 34-16-2 for... And WKA British champion as well, Andrew Miller, with Hanzi Zhao. And there's 60 wins, 16 losses, 0 draws. Top King Muay Thai world champion. Yeah, like, you know, some good credentials.
Yeah.
Down there. All right, so going up from that one, so, the return of Sexy Yama, Yoshihiro Akiyama from Japan. Just an old school.
Yeah, he is damn old. Like, I remember seeing him, like, kind of, like, I think when he was just debuting in the UFC, as like, you know, remember they went through that wave of time where the UFC would sign guys. That's like, this guy's a big deal in Asia.
Mm.
But I remember seeing him come over and going, wow, he's actually kind of old. Yeah. Like, when he first started in the UFC. Like,
he must be over 40, surely.
He'd be mid-40s now. I'm pretty sure he was 40-plus when he was finishing off in the UFC.
Yeah,
yeah, like, remember in the UFC, like, you know, pretty man.
Below, yeah.
Very tan. I'm very pretty sure, tan. Like, he's old. Like, he, up close, he probably looks like a leathery bag.
He is a male model. Yeah. Yeah.
That one, that's the name Sexy Yama. He's, like, so this is his one debut. Interesting they made in China, though. But, like, he's up against a Malaysian guy from, named Aljilan Fire? Fire? And then, I was just trying to look up his records. I'm going to go, all right, what's this guy all about from here? So, he's lost his last two fights, one by punches and one by rear naked choke. So, you're thinking it might be, like, a little bit of a layup for him, but you never know. Like, you know, Sexy Young is old, been out of the game for a little bit. Pretty good judo game player.
Yeah, good judo player. Yeah.
Also, got boxed up by Jake Shields.
Let's not forget that.
Very important.
But, like, he's got a really interesting, like, he's got those really interesting, just, like, sweeping out the front leg.
Mm.
Like, when the people step in, just off-balancing people. And, like, good step-ins to takedowns as well. So, if he kind of gets to the ground, it might be a different story. But, like, yeah, his hands are not one to be desired. Yeah, a lot of times.
And he's damn old.
They're damn old. Damn old.
But we are in the USADA free zone, that's so it. I don't know.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the top fight, though. So we have it's a Adam Waite Women's Muay Thai Championship match. So we've got the reigning champion, Stan Fairtex from Thailand, versus, like, making her one debut via coming from Australia via Queensland, Alma Yunuku.
Unicu.
Yeah. I was the last of Unicu. I was read it. Let's go. Unicu. From there. So, like, Alma's just been on great form as of late.
Yeah, unreal run.
You know, it's like, you know, like, had spent that time in Sancti Noi.
Yeah.
Training there. And has come back home, fights out of Modern Warrior with Scott Miners. Scott, what's his last name? Is it Miners? Was that his band name?
That's his band name. Yeah,
that's the guy in his Facebook. So I'm only going off his Facebook stuff, Scott.
His name is Scott. He's done a great job with Alma Scott.
Yeah, like, especially like the whole Unicu family as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, done a really good job.
Yeah, three siblings, all wicked fighters.
Yeah. So this is going to be a really interesting match. Like, you know, I only seen like Stan fight like in the last fight, but now I go, when I last saw her fight, I was going, I like this. And watched a couple of other fights from there. Like, yeah, she's fucking mean.
She's mean, yeah.
Mean, but, like, very precise what she does as well.
Yeah.
Mm. But it's like we talked about before, though. Like, you know, it's like has a very, like, you know, like when she's fighting Muay Thai, she clinches. When she's kickboxing, like, very right side dominant. But sometimes makes up her own rules, you know?
Yeah, well, we saw her fight.
Kickboxing?
Yeah, for that kickboxing.
I've seen a few throws for a kickboxing match.
Yeah, she just, you know, kickboxing match for that. When she, because she won the kickboxing one title before she actually won the Muay Thai one title. So, like, in that kickboxing fight, yeah, she just tossed her opponent all over the ring and, like, wasn't really warned about it.
Yeah.
Which is, like, it's kind of like a weird thing. Like, I don't know. I guess, like, they just wanted her in a title fight and it just happened to be a kickboxing match and, like, they just wanted to showcase her.
Yeah.
So they just let her do whatever she wanted.
Yeah. And, like, you know, it's like we've seen Alma Styles before as well. Like, just physically imposing.
Yeah.
What? Good eye on stuff.
Yeah.
Especially like right hand as well. How you reckon this is going to go down?
I think this is just like, and even the more I start to study it, I will put out a written breakdown tomorrow. Yeah. I'll give people at least a day and a half to read it before the fight actually goes on. That's enough time. I don't know how long you want. But this is really like one of the best matchups I've looked over in a really long time. That one's put on in particular. And I do think, like, I was putting the breakdown together, I said, I really think this is not a layup for anyone. Like, people who are unfamiliar with Alma or unfamiliar with Muay Thai in general might look at the situation. Like, Stamp, they've put a lot of promotional backing into. They want to make a star out of. But I think this is the fight that whoever comes out the winner, has a really rightful claim as the face of women's Muay Thai, with just the marketing machine that ONE has and just the stature of the fight and things like that. And like, both girls could be the face of women's Muay Thai, both super young. Like, Alma is like 18, 19, yeah. Stamp's only 21. Yeah, wicked match where I think like both girls do on the outside, like their right side. Stamp also with the kick and the right hand. Like, Stamp has a just like disgustingly powerful right kick, and it's like really like when she gets out, makes space and just establishes it right away, you can see the tempo of the fight just swing in her favor right off the bat, just in control. Like, you can see this in particular when she fought for the kickboxing titles, that she just slammed in a couple of right kicks, and then her opponent was not really sure. Like, they spent a lot of this fight at this really far away distance because Chuang just really was not sure how to navigate to the inside beyond that kick. And she works really well off her hips. Like, she shows the kick. Once she's established the kick, kind of got you worried about it, she shows it really well, turns it into other things, like does it that kind of Sen Chai style, turns it into a tee, starts to rip over with the right hand. But like, you look at her in the outside, like we said, in her kickboxing fights, that really like kind of right side dominant striking style. But her style of Muay Thai coming up before she kind of started to play around with different rule sets is she was an in-close knee fighter. She liked to get in, use her clinch knees, and that's where you can see she's got some really good throws. She likes to get in, work a little bit with the knees, get it done, that kind of exhausting clinching style. So I guess on the outside, it is kind of like a bit of a right side duel. Like, Alma likes to get going with her right hand too, but is a little bit less single shot oriented. She likes to just throw hands, not afraid to scrap a little bit to start to get on the front foot, and has a style where she works really well. She gets a roll on. Like, when Alma won the WBC world title over Zaza, who's no slouch, she really, you could see as she started to get her game going in the third rounds onwards, she just started to steamroll, where like Zaza just couldn't match her physically. But we'll be interested to see like how much does it come into play. Like, I don't know if you can get a roll on that well against Stan Fairtex. I don't know if anyone can. She's mean, very technical, but also like really flighty on the feet. Like, she doesn't stay in one spot a whole lot. Likes to get on the front foot and then take kind of like big sweeps out and have a look and kind of test you coming in. So Alma's also just very physically imposing on, you know, she will probably look to catch that kick, and she's got like a pretty good catch and dump game. Just kind of, and she works well. Like, it's not it's not an intentionally pretty catch and dump game. It's like a, you know, steer right down, drop you on your head to the canvas and exhaust you and hurt you with those dumps kind of game. It's not like a femur style of like really just pretty for the sake of pretty. It's like she's really trying to wrestle you down, impose herself over you, and tire you out with that. So it'd be interesting to see the outside exchanges, kind of like if one who can make the other feel their power first is probably a big thing, and how, because like, you haven't really seen, look, Stan was given trouble against Janet Todd in the fight that she won the Muay Thai rules or title, and like when Janet kind of really got on the front foot. So I think Alma's definitely very difficult to, you know, you see like Alma when she first, like before she was even 18, started fighting adults in the Australian Muay Thai scene, she fought some of the best and she was never like never tentative about it, always got right to work straight away, and I think that will kind of play into her hand here. I think it's just going to be interesting to see who backfoots who first. And if Stamp kind of has to like work through all her gears a little bit more and kind of impose that clinch game, because we've seen in a couple of Alma's fights in Australia, her recent one against Brooke Farrell and that very contentious decision over Yolanda Schmidt, she was given a few problems in the clinch. Not to say that she's a massively deficient clincher, but that was where like Brooke Farrell had success for one round of that fight. Clear success one round, and it was in the clinch. And, you know, the reason why a lot of people thought Yolanda won that second fight she had with Yolanda, that Alma was given the decision in, it was clinching where Yolanda was kind of having her way in that fight. So, I don't know, like, if Stamp, we do see, like, there is definitely that kind of situation, especially when it's Thai versus Westerner, she could be coming in here with no plan, just to smash. So maybe she's watched a bit of tape on Alma and she wants to play that kind of clinch game. But Alma, especially being so young, she would have improved her clinch so much. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. So yeah, definitely look for both girls to try to get on the front foot. And it's going to really be, looking that first round, I think it's going to be like a battle of establishing power. and then just try to see who kind of just gets that roll on and starts to maintain front foot. But yeah, great match.
Is this in the small gloves as well?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think so.
I think so. Like, it would be interesting because, like, you know, Stamps, you know, be used to it.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, but this would be Alma's first fight ever.
Yeah.
In the small gloves as well, which can, like, you know, work well for her because, like, with a, like, thing being strong and, like, you know, especially with her punching.
She gets a roll on well with punches.
But, like, but it can go the opposite way as well.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, and it's kind of like two things there, like you say. Alma, when she first said, you know, I signed with one, I said, little glove suits her. They're good because she's, you know, just likes to, yeah, get on the front foot with her hands. And, like, she's quite relentless with the hands. Like, if she lands a good one, she really goes after it.
Yeah.
But that being said, she doesn't mind a scrap. Mm. So that's kind of the other side of the coin with the little gloves, I think, that's often overlooked. That it's like, you look at someone and you think purely about the effectiveness of their punches and you go, yeah, little glove suits. But you got to really look at, like, how much comes back because you just can't wear one to give one the same way in little gloves or you can't, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But going to be interesting to see. Great fight.
Great card as well.
Yeah, really exciting match and a good card.
Cool. So, from that one, so yeah, that'd be on Saturday. Saturday in China. I don't know what the time conversion is there. I forget.
China are about 2 hours behind.
Yeah, I don't think it's heaps. Yeah.
So, like, yeah, this should be good. So, you know, remember to watch that. Go to the one app from there and just watch it for there. And then, like, they kind of updated the app and it's, like, really good in terms of, like, you know, you can look up the fighters' details and that a little bit more.
Yeah. But also, like, they stopped, like, hiding the YouTube stream as well, which is kind of helpful because they used to run it, like we say, heaps of times. So they run it through the app, but it's just a YouTube stream. But it's unlisted, so you can't find it through YouTube.
Yeah.
Okay, so break that one off there, and then we'll come back with like our last section for, like, you know, combat sport, fitness, and conditioning. All right.
This is the Enter the Double Dragon podcast.
Okay, and welcome back. So we're just going to our basically our combat sports fitness corner now, and just, like, you know, just this is, like, more so just the, you know, you do your other training and that, so, like, you know, hitting your pads, sparring, and drill work. So this, like, section is just to give you the little outside stuff. So, like, you know, we've went through already, like, you know, mobility. We went through weight training. We went through cardio, energy system training. Let's talk about eating a little bit. So just to preface this a little bit from here. So, like, I'm not a nutritionist. I'm not really going to give you set plans or anything like that, but I'm just going to give you some basic stuff that, you know, I know that works from other people I've talked to in the industry as well. And, like, you know, as always, from there, consult your doctor if you're going to do any kind of diet plan first. All right. So a lot of times when you think about, like, you know, eating for combat sports and, like, mostly, like, when I work with, like, athletes in general from there, probably the first thing I'll get them to do is just to track their food. So, like, you know, something as simple as MyFitnessPal is really simple to use and it's effective because it's got a scanning thing in there. It's free. There is a paid option, but you don't really need the paid option. So, like, you know, it's just a good way to, like, learn to track and measure your food, even if just for a little bit, just to get an understanding what you're actually eating. So, like, you know, calories you're taking in or the calories you're not taking in.
Yeah.
And also, like, you know, the macronutrients you have, like, you know, protein, fats, and carbs. Into there, like I said, MyFitnessPal is pretty good because it does have a barcode scanner, and, like, mostly all the Australian foods in there. And if it's not, you can type in your information. Just make sure, if you do, make sure it's right, because I've been through a few ones where you go, that's not fucking right. Who the fuck did this entry?
Yeah,
from there. So so that's, like, always the first part, because I find a lot of the times as well, like, probably especially a lot of people that train a lot, they probably under eat a little bit too much. So, like, the good thing about MyFitnessPal as well is you can put your food in, but you can also put in a bit of exercise as well. Like, you know, it's like, is it super accurate? No.
Yeah.
But you can get a general understanding for it. If you want a little bit more accuracy, I do always recommend do your training sessions in a heart rate monitor. Yeah. And then you can track, you know, and that usually heart rate monitors will give you a better idea of, like, what calories you burn. Same thing, is it super accurate? No. But it will give you a better understanding of from what to put in, because, like, to put it this way, a lot of times, if you want to gain weight or if you want to cut weight, it's all about, first thing is just calories. Forget everything else, it's calories. So if you want to get, you want to lose weight, be it fat or muscle, it's just weight loss in general. You have to be in a deficit of calories to whatever, like, whatever calories you're eating to keep your maintenance. If you want to gain weight, you have to be in surplus of calories from there. And I think some people forget, though, like, you know, okay, you might use a fitness tracker already. You put in, like, your calories from there, and you go, okay, I've got to eat this much. But I think a lot of people forget to actually track their exercise output as well.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, generally, let's say if I'm at a, like, just for, like, hypothetical, like, a calorie maintenance of 2,000 calories, I want to lose some weight. Like, I want to use a couple kilos, maybe half a kilo a week loss is, like, that's pretty safe. And that's pretty long term. So, like, 500 calories. Yeah, so, okay, so I've taken 1,500, all right? And then, like I said, so that's, like, one way of, like, basically bringing calories around. It's just not eating as much. But then I think a lot of people forget as well. Okay, I eat 1,500 calories, but, like, you know, I'm going to do my morning run, okay? And then I'm going to come in the afternoon, do 2 hours of training from there. And you probably fucking burn, like, about then maybe 800 calories there.
Yeah.
Okay, or maybe a little bit, give or take. So now you're, like, basically in a deficit of, you know, not 500, you're in a deficit of 1,300 calories. And they get to a tipping point, like, you know, like, some people I will give, like, 1,000 calorie deficit, like, if they're fucking huge people.
Yeah.
Generally, I won't. Start off a bit easier from there. But, like, you know, but then, like, if you're not putting it, then it's 1,000 calorie, and then you just go, like, fuck, man, feels like I'm eating a bag of dicks, like, my training sucks, like, you know, my eyes are falling out. It's like a lot of people just don't take that into consideration, and basically, yeah, like, you know, you still only want to be, like, you know, the plan was to be in a 500 calorie deficit.
Yeah.
So always, that's why tracking's good as well. Cause, like, you know, you could be eating more food and still recovering pretty good while still losing weight.
Yeah.
Some people just go just fucking way too overboard. So we're going to go a little bit into weight cutting as well. And, like, you know, just some of the horror stories of that from there. But, like, generally a lot of time is, like, you know, you can still eat most foods. There's no bad foods. Yeah. Like, you know, people just go, like, you know, ice cream is bad. Like, no, it's all the same.
Food's food.
Food's food.
Yeah.
Like, same thing, sure. Like, you know, how an apple's broken down to ice cream, like, you know, it's like, you know, to, like, a fucking, like, a red skin. From there, it's no different. It's sugar.
Yeah.
In the end of the day, from that one. Obviously, one has more fibers, more nutrients. But if you're thinking about, I'm trying to eliminate sugar from my diet, go, oh, well, good fucking luck to you.
Yeah.
You know, it's like every sugar breaks down the same. But, like, going from there, like, you know, as I said, like, just think about doing that. And I think a lot of people benefit just tracking and also tracking their exercise calorie as well. They'll get, like, you know, they'll actually get fitter. They'll actually maintain a lot more muscle mass and they'll recover a lot better as well. And, like, you know, as guys go along from there, you can drop down a little bit more. Like, you want to give yourself a game plan. Like, you know, if we're going to fight, like, in 8 weeks from there, go, all right, so I'm fighting at 70. Oh, like, you know, I'm 75 at the moment, but I want to fight at 70. So you could probably cut down, like, down to, from that workout, to at least about 72,
yeah,
71 and a half, and then cut the rest in water. And that's pretty safe bet if you're already lean. Like, if you're fucking jumping around and all the wrong parts are jiggling, it isn't a water cut that's your problem. You're too fucking fat.
Yeah.
But I like donuts.
Yes. It's like, you know, you can still enjoy donuts. Who said you can't? It's like, you can still fit it into your plan. You just might have to give up some other stuff, though. Yeah. that's always the trade-off.
Not the chicken twisties. That's it.
From there. Like, you know, you could do diets, like, from this one and still eat ice cream every day. Every day, you can still eat ice cream, but you have to count it in your calories. Yeah. It's just, but it might mean it's like, you know, okay, I want to eat ice cream, but then you're going to have to give something else. You probably have to eat, like, less food in general because it's just more calories. Yeah. That's the only difference. It's not because it's some kind of fucking evil, fucking big food company propaganda bullshit from there. It's just because, like, it just costs a lot of calories to eat. That's all it is. I eat ice cream every day. I don't give a fuck. Fuck everything. I want to eat ice cream. And I still can do that while losing weight. I'm doing it at the moment.
Yeah.
There.
How many push-ups would I have to do to burn off a tub of... This is hypothetical.
Hypothetical.
I'm asking for a friend.
I'm asking for a friend. Let's say, you know, if someone ate a tub of Ben and Jerry's in one go.
A pint?
Yeah. What would you have to do? What's a good method to burn that off?
All right, that's all your food for the day.
That's pretty much. It's like, yeah, it's like...
I can live with it.
What's your dinner? Like, you know, yelling at a naked picture of yourself.
But I think that's one that, like, fighters get wrong a lot of the time as well. Mm. They think about, like, exercise as a result of food rather than just controlling calories and just, like, you know, you've got to train to work on your skills and your condition. If you're adding in, like, a lot of supplementary cardiovascular fitness, like, in the pure frame of mind of like, I've eaten this much and so, like, you know, I'm trying to lose weight, so I'm going to add in runs. Whereas like, you could just control your calories a little bit better rather than just adding in unnecessary parts of training.
Yeah.
Whereas like, tons of fighters do.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's just that old school background where it's like, you know, I'm going to start kind of like, I'm going to get fit from there, so I'm just going to eat nothing but fucking chicken and broccoli.
Yeah.
And like, you know, add some sweet potato in there. Like, you know, and a lot of this stuff comes from bodybuilding as well. And it's like, it's not suitable. From there, it's like really like, I think what's happened is like a lot of times when I see it from there, it's like just fighters underfuel themselves.
Yeah.
Because it is a lot of this old school bullshit.
And it becomes like a flex of like, people just really associate like, it's just like lifestyle misery with discipline and they want to flex it. They just want to be like, you know, yeah, if you can have that pizza, I'm going to eat this disgusting fucking salad. It's like, right, man. Like, your goal is to, like, make weight and perform.
Mm.
And, like, whatever you're eating, if you're making weight and you're performing, not just in the fight, but on a daily basis in training, like, you're doing it right.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So, this goes into there, like, you know, like training, it should be periodized.
Yeah.
Like, you know, into different things. And even your eating as well. So, there'll be times when there's times to cut. That's coming up to a fight. That's how fighters are. Like, we it's a weight division sport. We're going to try and get into the most competitive weight division we can from there. So, like, but also, like, there's, like, it's not just kind of like, and then you should have a plan for afterwards, you know. You should have a maintenance period. So, when you cut, you know, a lot of things happen, like metabolic rates go down. When you cut, you try and limit as much muscle wastage as you can. You can do that for higher protein consumption. Obviously, there's a cutoff point for that as well from there. Like I said, I'm not going to really go into really semantics about it from there, like, you know, how much protein things are going to eat, because, like, I don't think that's my fucking place to say from that. But, like, you know, if you do want to look up on it, like, a couple of people look up Lane Norton.
Yeah, Lane Norton's really good.
Yeah. Okay. Renaissance periodization, Mike Isratel, also a great thing. I think that's one of the first ones where I really opened my eyes about the eating stuff. So they're good two resources. Check out the Instagrams, check out their ebooks as well. It's like, you know, really, like, as we always talked about a lot of this time in this part, is like, educate yourself, really.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, have a coach, read books, take information, talk to people. So you have a maintenance period. So the maintenance period is like, you know, basically, you know, like I said before, like, my maintenance calories was 2,000 calories. So you can slowly go back up to that. And if you do sometimes right, you can even, like, you know, a thing called reverse dieting that Lane Norton talks about from there. Each week you might increase your calories by like 100 calories. And you might go past that point of 2,000 from there, a bit higher, and still maintain the same weight. Because, like, you know, basically your body's just going, fuck, you know, I need this nutrients. And it starts to actually, the metabolism starts to really fire. And you do it to a point where it's like, it starts to reverse on itself. And then you go, okay, I might bring it back down. Like, I'm starting to gain a little bit too much weight here. Okay, go back down and then sit this main happy period. So, you know, if you do things right, you can actually go back to a higher calorie. You can eat more food as well. And, like, you know, maintain the same level of body fat. Okay. There is also times where you should do like a muscle building phase, and like, that's not going to be too often a fighter's one, because like, basically fighters, like, they fight very often, they want to fight.
Yeah.
There's no really designated off seasons. There is some, like, little bits that we're fighting at the moment, like this time period is like a little bit dead.
Somebody call me.
Yeah. It's like, we put out the messages of the sigh and that, but Rebellion's looking a little bit too stacked.
Yeah, that's looking really sad.
Might get on roots.
I'll calm down.
Yeah, and also like going like, you know, December, January, there's people on holidays as well. So like, this is where you go in the surplus of calories. So like, okay, like I said before, going back to the 2,000 calorie mark, I might go to 2,500 to go up 500 and seem to be like gaining half a kilo a week. Might also take my cardio down and increase my weight sessions. Same thing, to build more muscle. What we're trying to do there is, like, you know, we got to gain a bit of muscle. And when you do this from here, like, fighters freak out. They start to lose their fucking abs. And he's like, they go, no, I'm getting too fat. And it's like, and it is. It's a lot of psychological stuff that you go through on that. But you just got to think about the end goal.
Yeah.
But basically go, look, this is only temporary. And really, if when we go back, you know, go back to, like, we go to the bulk, go back to maintenance a bit to kind of keep our body happy hormonally and metabolically. Because, like, when you go surplus calories, that fucking sucks as well. You're stuffing down food that you don't want to eat a lot of times. Like, you go, I'm fucking full, but I got to get these calories. From there, it's not fun either way. Cutting and bulking, they're not really fun. Maintenance is, like, it's also a good psychological reset. So even in maintenance, you get to feel like, you know, you track, and you'll get to a point that you know. You'll look at food and go, all right, that's about 200 grams of meat there. That's so many cars that you can eye stuff off. Like, it takes a little while, but maintenance, it gets to that point where you don't have to track. You just go, all right, you know, weigh myself like, you know, a couple times where I go, eat a little bit less, eat a little bit more. Go like that. But, like, you know, what we just do then we go back to cutting down. From there, we got all this new muscle mass. We cut down, we get leaner, we got more muscle mass. And then when we go to weight cuts, we can draw more water out of the muscles. So it makes it a little bit better instead of just kind of just fucking just killing ourselves and trying to waste muscle. And that's why we try and do, like, you know, cut, maintenance, bulk. Most of the time, you're going to find for, like, fighters, it's going to be more so cut and maintenance. Yeah. But I think the main thing, if you get out of this, like, from there, try and have good maintenance periods, guys. Like, you know, you cut for a bit and then have a good maintenance period for a while. Don't, like, you know, fucking stress yourself out about it. Reset your metabolism from there and, like, and enjoy food.
Yeah. Like, you know, go out to eat with your friends. Like, I think it's, like, I guess, Travis, like, you talk about, like, the psychological issues behind it. There's, like, a few things. Like, you get used to, like, you know, you come – it's a weird place to be when you know – you know, a lot of the time a fight follows a fight is, like, you know, a little bit eating good. Mm. You know, you'll have some feeds, yeah, as people do. And then, but, like, here's the point where, like, when you get on the scales, like, you're just, like, a lot of the time for people, like, obscenely shredded. Like, just so shredded.
Oh, yeah.
Then you have a few, and then you start to see yourself in the mirror and go, fuck, I've put on a couple. And it's like, yeah, but, like, you don't have to look like you look on the scales all the time. It's actually, like, just, like, not reasonable. It's, like, it's an unreasonable consideration that that's, like, a maintainable thing. Like, you look like that for the purpose of getting on the scale, and then you chuck some food and water in, and then you fill back up. But it's also, like, just added to the point where, like, fighters with each other are just, like, really mean schoolgirls. Like, you see someone who starts to eat a little bit more and go, fuck, you're looking a little fat, man.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, like, there's just really ugly cultures behind, like, weight cutting and things. Like, in no other part of life is it appropriate to look at someone who's put on a couple of kilos and go, damn, you're looking fat. What do you weigh at the moment, bro? But, like, fighters do it all the time.
That's it.
Which makes people, like, unnecessarily attached to the idea of maintaining a weight that's really close to their fight weight, which is, like, obviously you don't want to, like, and there is these other ideas, like, that are correct ideas of, like, not blowing up a lot in between fights, but it's, like, you got to understand what the healthy range is.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to stick, like, glue to the weight that you generally want to be fight weight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's about peaking and...
I think, like, just a general rule, like, from your fight weight, probably, like, 10%.
10%.
That's pretty good.
But 10% is a lot of leeway, really, when you think about it, as far as upping your calories and stuff like that. Like you don't have to hang out at a fight weight all the time, because that will really become a punish. And if you try to, especially if it's like you're someone who fights a lot, if you're trying to hang out at a fight weight all the time and not give thought to, like, smart weight cutting, like, you'll burn out really, really, really bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really bad. Like, you'll stop recovering after sessions. And if you train hard like fighters do, you're just pushing through that kind of burnout.
It's definitely. And, like, you know, like, I think a lot of times as well, when, like, you know, people just probably focus too much on the weight cut as well. Like, we can do a whole podcast on weight cutting. Not going to go too in depth from here, but really, like, a lot of times, if you have to cut, like, over 2 kilos a lot of times from there, like, that's like, I was just going to go, man, I don't know if your diet was in order, if that was the case.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, there is, like, times, like, when people are pretty lean and they hold a fair bit of muscle mass, especially when you start going, like, you know, like, 72 is like 72, 75 plus from there. The muscle just holds more water and you're allowed to cut a lot. You can cut more water.
Yeah.
And that's okay from that. It's like, you know, sometimes girls, that's a hard slog. It's like they're trying to cut the weight and they just can't do it. And there's also a lot of hormonal stuff that goes on as well. So
yeah, that's
for them, that it's a longer journey. For them, I always recommend longer maintenance periods as well. Like, they cut and, like, girls just don't seem to bounce back as good, so they need longer maintenance periods from there, which is fine because you've got to keep the system healthy. And, like, also just as well, like, you know, don't like buy into fucking fads. Like, you know, I see, like, some like, you hear some people like, yeah, I'm on keto, Atkins, go, well, you're training my suck dick, man.
Yeah,
good on you. It's like, because you look at the demands of the sport, it's a mixed dominant sport. So, like, you know, you need to have lactic capabilities, which is aerobic. You need endurance capabilities, which is aerobic from there. You need ATP, like these very short bursts. You need all of them from there. But generally, a lot of times, anything over a minute is endurance. And then it's usually broken down into, like, you know, to a certain point, it's a glycolytic sport. It needs sugar. It needs carbs. So, like, you know, when people do keto and things like that, like, there has been cases of, like, you know, of people like doing it and getting a change up. So you're basically changing your fuel source from carbs to fat, and that's what carbs and fats are. They're just basically fuel sources. So people become more fat burners than carb burners. But it takes such a long time to do it from there that, like, is it worth it? Like, you could have done all this good training in the meantime. Like, I've heard it's like even 6 months before you can even do it. From there, and then you go, it's like, and then by the time you change over, it's like, you know, it's like, I could have gotten all this good training in the meantime, though. And then, like, really a lot of times, like, it's just like, you know, don't be afraid to have carbs. And, like, you know, if you're just starting off, and if you are, like, a bit of a higher body fat percentage from there, just try and have your carbs around your training times.
Yeah.
Outside of that, you know, more so fats, have your proteins all the time from there. Off of that, and always drink lots of water as well.
Yeah. More water than you think.
Yeah, a lot more water than you think.
Having a bit of salt in the water has helped me heaps as well. Yeah. I get those muscle cramps as much as I used to.
Yeah, that's a tip that I got from Phil Drew when I did his course. Like, it's like, you know, you think about it, we drink water, but, like, you know, especially fighters and people, we just sweat it out heaps.
Yeah.
And piss it out as well, especially. So, like, you know, we've got to put those natural electrolytes back in, like, really just something like pink Himalayan salt. Just a pinch or so, like in like a bottle of water. Every bottle of water you do will, like, actually help you keep the water in your system. Also has that natural electrolytes from there. So if you ever get like a lot of cramping, like calf cramps and things like that, add it to your water from there, and that should help with, like, dissipating the cramps also. All right, and I think that should do that part actually from there. Okay, cool. So remember to follow us, like, and subscribe to us and rate and review us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, all other podcast platforms. We're also on Instagram and Facebook at Enter the Double Dragon, on Twitter at @double_enter, and also check out our blog page from there, doubledragonpodcast.home.blog. And we'll catch you next time.
There you go.
Us.